There was something deeply tribal about the people, Richard decided. He tried to pick out distinct groups. There were the ones who looked like they had escaped from a historical reenactment society. The ones who reminded him of hippies. The albino people, in grey clothes and dark glasses. The polished, dangerous ones in smart suits and black gloves. The huge, almost identical women who walked together in twos and threes and nodded when they saw each other. The tangle-haired ones, who looked like they probably lived in sewers, and who smelled like hell. And 100 other types and kinds. He wondered how normal London, his London, would look to an alien. And that made him bold. He began to ask them as he went, "Excuse me, I'm looking for a man named De Carabas and a girl called Dor. Do you know where I'd find them?" People shook their heads, apologized, averted their eyes, moved away. Richard took a step back and stepped on someone's foot. Someone was well over 7 feet tall and was covered in tufty ginger hair. Someone's teeth had been sharpened to points. Someone picked Richard up with a hand the size of a sheep's head and put Richard's head so close to someone's mouth that Richard almost gagged. "I'm really sorry," said Richard. I'm looking for a girl named Dor, do you know?" But someone dropped him onto the floor and moved on. Another whiff of cooking food wafted across the floor, and Richard, who had managed to forget how hungry he was ever since he had declined the prime cut of roast cat he could not think how many hours before, now found his mouth watering and his thinking processes beginning to grind to a halt. The iron-haired woman, running the next food stall he came to, did not reach to Richard's waist. When Richard tried to talk to her, she shook her head, drew a finger across her lips. She could not talk, or did not talk, or did not want to talk. Richard found himself conducting the negotiations for a cottage cheese and lettuce sandwich and a cup of what looked and smelled like a form of home-brewed lemonade in dumb show. His food cost him a ballpoint pen and a book of matches he had forgotten he had. The little woman must have felt that she had got by far the better of the deal, for as he took his food, she threw in a couple of small, nutty biscuits. Richard stood in the middle of the throng, listening to the music. Someone was, for no reason that Richard could easily discern, singing the lyrics of Greensleeves to the tune of Yakety Yak, watching the bizarre bazaar unfold around him, and eating his sandwiches. He realized, as he finished the last of the sandwiches, that he had no idea how anything he had just eaten had tasted, and he resolved to slow down and chew the biscuits more slowly. He sipped the lemonade, making it last. "You need a bird, sir?" asked a cheery voice close at hand. "I got rooks and ravens, crows and starlings, fine, wise birds, tasty and wise. Brilliant!" Richard said, "No, thank you," and turned around. The hand-painted sign above the stall said, "Old Bailey's Birds and Information." There were other, smaller signs scattered about. "You wants it, we knows it." And, "You won't find a plumper starling." And, "When it's time for a rook, it's time for Old Bailey." Richard found himself reminded of the man he had seen when he'd first come to London. He used to stand outside Leicester Square tube station with a huge hand-painted sandwich board which exhorted the world to less lust through less protein, eggs, meat, beans, cheese, and sitting. Birds hopped and fluttered about small cages that looked like they had been woven out of television aerials. "Information, then," continued Old Bailey, warming to his sales pitch. "Roof maps, history, secret and mysterious knowledge. If I don't knows it, it's probably better forgot. That's what I says." The old man still wore his feathered coat, was still wrapped about with ropes and cords. He blinked at Richard, then pulled on the pair of spectacles tied about his neck with string, and inspected Richard carefully through them.
"Hang on, I knows you. You was with the Marquis de Carabas, on the rooftops. Remember, hey? I'm Old Bailey. Remember me?"
He thrust out his hand, pumped Richard's hand furiously.
"I actually," said Richard, "I'm looking for the Marquis and for a young lady named Dore. I think they're probably together."
The old man did a little jig, causing several feathers to detach themselves from his coat and provoking a chorus of raucous disapproval from the various birds around them.
"Information! Information!"
he announced to the crowded room.
"See, I told them. Diversify, I said. Diversify! You can't sell rooks for the stew pot forever. Anyway, they taste like boiled slipper. And they're so stupid! Thick as custard! You ever eaten rook?"
Richard shook his head. That was something he could be certain of, at any rate.
"What'll you give me?"
asked Old Bailey.
Sorry?
Said Richard, awkwardly leaping from ice floe to ice floe in the stream of the old man's consciousness.
"If and I'll give ye your information, what'll I get?"
"I don't have any money," said Richard, "and I just gave my pen away."
He began to pull out the contents of his pockets.
"There," said Old Bailey, "that."
"My hanky?" asked Richard.
It was not a particularly clean handkerchief. It had been a present from his Aunt Maud on his last birthday.
Old Bailey seized it and waved it above his head happily.
"Never you fear, laddie," he sang triumphantly. "Your quest is at an end. Go down there, through that door. You can't miss them. They're auditioning."
He was pointing towards Harrod's extensive network of food halls. A rook cawed maliciously.
"None of your beak," said Old Bailey to the rook.
And to Richard he said,
"Thank'ee for the little flag."
He jigged around his stall, delighted, waving Richard's handkerchief to and fro.
"Auditioning," thought Richard. And then he smiled. It didn't matter. His quest, as the mad old roofman had put it, was at an end. He walked toward the food halls.